Blog Talk Radio.
You ready?
It's time to start.
This should be played at high volume.
This is the Andrea Shea Game Show.
And I'm just a gal like any other gal.
That's cool.
You know what this is.
What is this?
The Andrea Shea Game Show.
It's me, don't you remember?
We were just talking about you.
Totally amazing.
Thank you.
The Andrea Shea Game Show.
I think you've got something there.
Andrea Shea King.
You're really going to like it.
Quite understandable.
Is on the air.
Something's definitely going on here.
Take my word for it.
Now.
Come on. It's showtime.
Make it so.
Ready, go.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the program. Nice to have you with me on this Friday evening as we tackle a topic that is very controversial tonight. Let me say hi to the folks who are joining us on the stream, live stream, as well as the folks who are in the chat room. Let's acknowledge these people. Bob the Patriot, Graybeard. Oh, let's see. Bob the Patriot is from Connecticut. Graybeard is from Illinois. Nice to see you in there, Graybeard. He posts at pitchpull.blogspot.com. We have several guests in the chat room, and I'm inviting them to log in if they'd like to and participate in the chat room conversation as we move forward. We've got JY1977 with us, and I think this might be JY from Korea, but I'm not sure. Mabel in St. Cloud, Central Florida. Nice to have you with us, Mabel. Mountain Goat. Well, I'm telling you, there's a name for you, Mountain Goat. Paula Gordon, Dr. Paula Gordon. Nice to have you in the chat room and joining us tonight. C. Weeble, NB Citizen. Another guest in there, Loud Citizen. Sharp Shorts. Couple more guests, Don Ecuador from, the Space Coast here in Central Florida, and, of course, your host in the chat room, our show producer, Third Wave Dave. Nice to have you all with us tonight. Now, tonight, as you probably know, we are talking about, as I said, a very controversial subject tonight having to do with President Obama's eligibility question. We have since found out that judges on the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals have been told that President Obama is a security risk and a usurper, lacking constitutional authority since he admitted a dual citizenship at birth, thus making him ineligible for the office under the U.S. Constitution's requirement that the president be a natural-born citizen. The brief was filed in a case that was brought by lead plaintiff Charles F. Kirshner, Jr., and others, and the case was brought against Congress. Now, Mr. Kirshner is with us this evening to bring us up to date on the action filed in January 2009 on behalf of himself, Lowell T. Patterson, Daryl James Lenormand, and Donald Nelson, Jr. We're waiting for attorney Mario Apuzzo to call in as well. But we do have Mr. Kirshner, Commander Kirshner, on the line with us. Nice to have you with us again. It's nice to have you back on the program, Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you. Nice to have you. I want to see if this – I've got one more caller on here, and I'm wondering if this might be him. Let me just check this number first and see if it is. We've got a caller on area code 575. Would you identify yourself, please?
Oh, that's Bob from New Mexico.
Okay, Bob. All right. I'm going to put you back on mute. And we'll wait for Attorney Apuzzo to join us.
Yeah, Mario should be area code 732.
732. Okay, well, we'll watch for him. We'll watch for him. Well, can we get started underway without Attorney Apuzzo, or do you prefer that we try to reach him, maybe play a little song?
Well, I think we should try to reach him because, I can give you the overview of my opinion of what's going on, but the legal aspects of the brief and what he went into in there, it's better if he presents it since he wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly believe that Obama is a security risk to this country. He's an ineligible candidate, and God knows what his real identity is. He hasn't proven it to us. And the words security risk come from that WND coverage of our brief. So that's their reporting on the brief, and I agree that that analysis that he is a security risk. To have an ineligible candidate there, you don't know his legal identity, you don't know his real allegiance is. He's born a dual citizen. He had a third citizenship in Indonesia. He has possible relationships in Kenya. We don't know what he did there when he went there before age 23, when he could have renewed his Kenyan citizenship. Everything's locked up and sealed. He campaigned for his cousins over there in Kenya. He bows to Saudi kings. He gives terrorists citizenship rights under their constitution when they're not even citizens, and they're captured illegal enemy combatants, which aren't even entitled to the Geneva Convention and the rules of war. They're just, you know, prior to the modern time, they'd have been just taken to the backs of the line and shot on the spot. Illegal combatants are spies, you know. They're terrorists. They would have just been shot. Now he wants to give them constitutional rights. He is a security risk. He appoints people to the cabinet and his czars that are security risks. Those czars don't even get background checks. They've been waived. Some of them are known communists. I mean, it's unbelievable the connection some of these people have to the Cuban intelligence service. So when WND used the word security risk, I totally agree. But the legal determination of that, how that was presented in the brief, I would have to let Mario present that, because he wrote this 100-page brief to the court to bring him up to speed as to why we should not have been dismissed at the trial level. But let's try to get Mario.
Yeah,
can we have somebody...
I'm going to play a little song here. We're going to ask our listeners to just stand by while we go.
Yeah, if you'll get to me offline, I'll give you the cell number.
I actually have it. I'm all set.
Okay, all right.
Okay, hold on. Stand by. Kirshner.
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead and type in his cell phone number in the email so that I can go ahead and. I just tried him, but I didn't get an answer. So I'm not sure I'm using the correct email address. I mean, cell phone address.
Right to. I should send you by email.
Yes. Yeah, send it to me in the email.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hold on.
This is real radio, folks.
I know it's 732, but I won't say the rest.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know he had a major deposition this morning, but he normally is very prompt.
Mm-hmm.
First time he hasn't made it.
Yeah.
Did you get it? All right, well, let's just go.
Let's go for it.
So you ask me questions. As far best I can do, I'll address the brief. I certainly have read it, and
okay.
We'll go from there.
Let's go from
but
there.
But just keep in mind, I'm not a lawyer.
Well, and you're so practiced at this because of all of the interviews that you've done, to date with this. This has been an ongoing project of yours for the last year.
Yeah. I've been a student of the Constitution all my life. I've carried a copy of it wherever I go virtually for the last 40 years. I mean, and I took an oath to defend it as a commissioned officer and as an enlisted man prior to that. I joined the service at age 17 to serve my country.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that oath as an enlisted person and then later as a commissioned officer. And it's a solemn oath, and I truly believe that this in the oath in this country has to be the Constitution has to be defended. I didn't swear an oath to a man or an office. I didn't swear an oath to the office of the presidency. I didn't swear an oath to the Congress. I swore an oath to that Constitution, and they are trying to trample it. And the people are starting to awake. We saw what happened in Massachusetts, and I think it's because of people like myself and my co-plaintiffs who have fought the battle last year, keeping the flame of liberty alive. And the people have now awakened to what he really is. He showed himself, and as they say in some circles, the worm is turning, and a lot of his mojo is gone.
I know. Well, for sure. Mm. Now, before we get underway here, and I want to make sure I'm looking at the numbers that are coming in, folks who are starting to call in, and I want to compare them against Attorney Apuzzo's number to make sure that it's not one of his. I've got my producer now calling Mr. Apuzzo. And to see if he can reach him too. So we'll just hold off and see if we can get a hold of him. What I want to ask you about also, before we get underway and before we start talking about the legalities of it, the full page ads that you've been running. Tell us about that.
Yes, I was putting in these full page educational ads in the Washington Times National Weekly Edition. And I selected that paper because it's about 100,000 circulation nationally once a week. It's a conservative bent to it, but it's read by all the leading opinion makers and writers in this country, all the academic politico types who write and make the decisions. And I first put a series in there, about the lawsuit, explaining the 12 counts, and then I went on to publishing essays on natural born citizen written by my attorney, some things that I wrote myself, and also things that quotes from courts. And but along the way, I ran out of resources. I'm a retired person, and I have limited resources to continue this. So I opened it up and asked the American people if they'd like to help donate to keep them going. That was around July, and I put up the website www.protectourliberty.org. Protectourliberty.org. That's an O-U-R in there. And if people listening want to go there right now and make a donation, I'll give them a shout-out if we get any, and I won't use their name. I'll just say the amount and what state it was from or whatever and say thank you. But we need the financial help to keep this going. But then we started putting ads in there of a Mario's essay on that natural-born citizen was defined by Vattel, but it's also defined by natural law and just logic. I mean, if you're born in the country and of two citizens, you're children of citizens, it's naturally obvious you're a citizen. You don't need any law or court to determine that you're a citizen. You're naturally a citizen. That's natural law. It goes back to the dawn of humankind. If you're born in the tribe of members of the tribe, you're a naturally born citizen of that tribe, naturally born member of that tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And the progressive movement has tried to redefine that. And of course, it comes to a head here with Obama pushing the limit and getting himself elected, and our Congress refusing to investigate this. And they did McCain and not him. And I put this all in these articles, these full-page ads. We've been progressively moving up the ladder from talking about the suit to talking about natural born to talking about what the courts need to do. I quoted Chief Justice Marshall from 1921 suit in the Supreme Court. It went, and he said, this was a Colleen versus Virginia. He said that the court cannot shirk its duty. It's the guardian of the Constitution, and to not take a case just because it's difficult, or to paraphrase, a hot potato, they can't do that. To do so is treason against the Constitution. It's my opinion that what these courts, these judges are doing is treason against our Constitution. They took an oath just like I did. I mean, all we're asking for is a hearing of the merits and define what a natural-born citizen is from a legal perspective, for the, because it wasn't necessary before because everybody knew what it was, but Obama is testing that by forcing it to a legal decision. So we have to take this legal question to the court and get a decision as it applies to Article 2, because Obama is being a complete constitutional terrorist in a sense, trying to trample the darn thing. He has said in his life that it's that the Constitution is outdated and something to be got around. No longer need it almost, he said.
Mm-hmm.
He looks at it as an obstacle to the power of the progressive movement.
Then we went past
the courts into educating people what a citizen is versus a natural-born citizen, because they try to equate the two. They try to say if you're a citizen, that's it. If you're born here, that's it. You know, it doesn't matter if you were born here of Martians, if you're born here illegal aliens or whatever. They consider you a full-fledged natural-born citizen, eligible to be president. No way. I mean, there's no court case in history that really asserts that. That if you're born here of aliens who never established citizenship in this country, that you are even a citizen of this country. It's just assumed, but it's never been tested in court. That you, if you weren't at least a permanent resident here, you know, and the Wong Kim Ark case, of course, that was the case that he was granted citizenship in 1898 because the parents were legally residents here. But if two Mexicans come across the border, have a baby here, and then take it back to Mexico and raise the child there, that person going to become president someday? No, that's just a citizen.
Yeah.
Natural born, you got to be born here of two citizens in this country.
That's right.
That's natural law.
Let me get you to pause here and just to let you know, as well as our listeners, that our producer, Third Wave Dave, contacted Mario Puzo, who is on a train right now, and says that he won't be able to call for at least 15 more minutes. And he said he's very sorry. He was tied up in court, and so as soon as he gets off the train, he'll call us. So that's a
point. My lawyer is a citizenship attorney, and he has an active practice in law. I retained him. He didn't come forward and just file this suit and look for plaintiffs. I went out and looked for the lawyer that I wanted to take my case. And Mario, I picked Mario, and he knows what he's doing. He's a citizenship attorney. He is a constitutional expert, and he's done a really great job. In fact, if you ever read the Post and Email news site, that's a smaller version of WND,
the editor called
his brief a masterpiece in constitutional writing, and it'll be read for decades.
Wow. Wow. Now, we should say that this case that you've brought alleges that Congress failed to follow the Constitution, which, and I'm reading this now from Bob Unruh's report at WorldNet Daily, which provides that Congress must fully qualify the candidate elected by the Electoral College electors, and that the complaint also asserts that when Obama was born, his father was a British subject or citizen and Obama himself was the same. And that contends that the framers of the Constitution, when they adopted the requirement that a president be a natural-born citizen, excluded dual citizens.
You are
also alleging in this case would you call it a complaint as well?
Well, the original filing is called legally a complaint, yes, but let's just call it a lawsuit for the lay people.
Okay. You also allege that Obama has not conclusively proven that he was born in Hawaii and that Obama acquired Kenyan citizenship when Kenya gained its independence from Britain. You further challenge that Obama might not even be in the United States legally.
Yes, because he could have been adopted. He says he went to Indonesia at age 6, but he will not produce any travel records to document that. But if he got there at age 5 or less, under the Hague Convention international law, he became a citizen of Indonesia from the adoptive father.
Just like
if we would adopt a child from Korea and bring him here to the United States, that infant child becomes a U.S. citizen instantly. So he could be an Indonesian citizen, too.
That's right. We're going to start taking some calls because we do have the calls lined up here, and we've got Bob the Patriot from Connecticut who is on the line with you, and he's been waiting since we started. So let's go ahead and take his call. Bob, how are you doing tonight?
Good evening, Andrew. Good evening, Mr. Kirchner.
Good evening.
What I would need to know is, what are your thoughts about the way that the so-called mainstream corporate-owned press's own views on this as being nothing more than a wild conspiracy theory, in particular Glenn Beck, and most recently, from what I've heard, L.A.-based talk radio host Tammy Bruce? And it's just related.
Well, I wouldn't lump Glenn Beck into the mainstream morass of far lefties that are the main culprits here, but he recently did make some statements which are a little bit outlandish in calling our movement stupid, but in playing into the far less rules for radical Solinsky, I believe that's rule number 5, ridicule your enemy. I mean, he shouldn't be using that against people who basically formed a big piece of a Tea Party movement where people that are questioning the eligibility of Obama. And the mainstream media is the fourth estate of our government, and this cover-up and of an obfuscation of Obama's whole life and hiding his records would never have been allowed if our mainstream media would have been doing its job and filed a Freedom of Information Act request and things like they've done in the past. I mean, they went after McCain. The New York Times wrote an article questioning his citizenship in the primary. They didn't do it for Obama. They were in the tank for Obama. They weren't the mainstream media for Obama. They were his propaganda machine. I mean, it was like National Socialist Germany. I mean, the media was totally backing Obama 100%, and he was their candidate, and they didn't want to look under any stone that would put any kind of a piece of tarnish or moss on his candidacy. And they anointed him and they protected him. They didn't just cover up. They wrote articles defending him and attacking the people questioning his eligibility. Today, a recent survey by WND said that 50% of the American people, roughly exactly, I think 49% exactly, say 50%. Either do not believe he's a natural-born citizen and even born in the USA, or they have doubts. They seriously question his eligibility. When you put those two categories together, it was 49%. And yet the mainstream media talking heads are on TV saying, oh, there's always those half-dozen nutcase birthers out there that are still questioning the eligibility of president. Half a dozen? It's 50% of America, and it's a large part of that Tea Party movement.
Mm-hmm.
So they are still covering this. They are covering this up with the cooperation of both political parties, because the 2008 election was a disgrace for the Constitution, because neither candidate was a pure dyed-in-the-wool natural-born citizen. Because we know that McCain alleges he was born on a military base in Panama, and his citizenship was challenged because of that, and the Senate gave him a pass with a resolution SR 511. But Obama was never looked at. But because both parties were looking, they made a deal. You keep quiet about McCain from now on, and we'll keep quiet about you, and we won't even dig. And both parties have friends in the press, so the press was just totally shut down on this. Now, when the lawsuit started, I believe that after the election, he won the election because of this cover-up, I think the word was put out threatening the media. We don't want any coverage of the eligibility now, even though after the Electoral College voted, the Congress should have still investigated under the 20th Amendment to qualify the candidate. It wasn't done, and I wrote dozens of letters asking them to do it. And senators, everybody, the head of the Judiciary Committee, Senator Arlen Specter at that time, they just didn't even answer me. So that's one of the reasons I filed my lawsuit against Congress. They completely shirked their duty to the Constitution. They all took oaths just like I did. Say 1,000 people ask about McCain, 100,000 ask about Obama, yet they ignored the complaints and questions of the citizens about Obama and investigated McCain. That's unequal protection.
Under the law, absolutely.
That's right.
Bob,
the Constitution protects the minority. We lost the election, but if the candidate cheated, the Constitution is supposed to protect the minority from the mass of the majority cheating on the election. If you get an ineligible player on a football field and he makes it across the goal line, does that score count? No,
no.
He cheated. So we had an ineligible candidate running for president, and the Congress should have investigated after the press should have exposed him, and he wouldn't have won the election. But after he won the election, the Constitution says he must be qualified There's only three qualifications: age, residency, and natural born citizenship status. They didn't even bother to look.
Hey, Bob, do you have any other comment that you want to make before we move on to another caller?
The problem with all of this is that it's all about an end around the Constitution. There are many people in the progressive movement and the globalist movement who think the Constitution is a conspiracy theory against their vision of a one-world government, a new world order. And to me, the media has played right into their hands because they're
the media
not
is, the
media.
Media is the progressive. The media is controlled by the progressive. I guess you know that. They are the SDS people grown up. They control the media. They control the Congress. They surely control the Democratic Party. The progressives are they're the history people. They rewrote the history of this country starting in the 1890s. They completely rewrote the history of this country and made the founders look like a bunch of racist idiots that no longer have any meaning in modern society. When their founders knew, they knew the weaknesses of human nature when it comes to power and government, and they wrote, in my opinion, the most perfect document they could have written at the time they wrote it for governance of people. They were wise. They know the weaknesses. They knew about the usurpation and foreign influence that could happen, which is why they wanted a natural-born citizen, a child of citizens born in the country. They didn't want any foreign influences. We got now a citizen of the world. We don't want a citizen of the world. We want a natural-born citizen of the USA.
Amen to that. Bob, thanks a lot for your call. Appreciate your comments. We're going to go ahead and take a call now from our friends. I think 770 is the area code. Let me see if I can bring him up. Okay, 770, you're on the air live. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to talk to you again, Commander Kirpner. Thank you very much. You are a multiple hero and patriot who's again hazarding himself for the sake of our country.
I'm not a hero, sir. I'm a patriot. I will take the word patriot, but I am not a hero.
Well,
there's only ordinary people.
I regard you as a hero, sir. You're in
there
danger.
Are only ordinary people living in heroic times. The heroes are the men that died on that battlefield and got the Medal of Honor. Those are the heroes.
Well, I think
I'm a patriot, but I'm not.
I do.
Okay.
But you're no doubt familiar with the cases United States versus Wong Kim Ark, Perkins versus Elg, and Minor versus Apicet, right? I mean, you're pretty much familiar.
All right, I'm not as familiar as my lawyer, but yes, I am familiar with them.
Good. Well, two more have surfaced. One is called the Venus, which was
decided. Oh, the 1814. 1814, I know about one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's, what's significant about it is because the judge who wrote for the majority, a guy named Henry Brockholz Livingston, he wrote. He quoted Vattel on page 12 of his ruling, and this is what he said. It's really important.
I know what it says. It's in our lawsuit, and it's in the brief. It's quoted
the
brief.
Okay, good. And, yeah, the fact that he uses Vattel is of vital importance. And also Shanks versus DuPont in
Not only did he use Vattel's words, he mentioned Vattel's name.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. And he specifically said Vattel, and he said that the natives or indigenes are those born in the country of parents who are citizens.
Right.
And in Shanks versus DuPont, which came along in 1830, this was also significant. The court, Justice Story, who again wrote for the majority, he said, "For children born in a country, continuing while under age in the family of the father, partake of his national character as a citizen of that country." In other words, they partake of the father. Their condition is that of the father as far as citizenship goes. We've got at least, what is it, five or
well,
six?
Shanks versus DuPont is on page 21 of the brief, and the Venus case is on page 21. Minor versus Havasid is on page 22. And Minor versus Havasid said that a person born in the country of two citizens of the country is without a doubt a natural-born citizen. Others will go, I'm paraphrasing, others will go further, you know, and have a lesser standard, but of that there is doubt. So that was written in like 1875. The further you get away from the founders, the more the progressive influence starts to get in there. But Minor versus Havasid made it very, very clear. There's no doubt that the intent was born in the country of citizens of the country. That's natural law. There's no law. There's no body needs to write anything or go to a court to question that citizenship. Everybody knows.
Commander Kirkner, what you're doing goes to show. Look, when it comes to the facts of this case, let me summarize it. I think effectively and succinctly, we have more objective evidence, supporting the notion that Barack Obama is not a natural-born citizen, then there is objective evidence supporting the notion that he is. Now,
mm-hmm.
given the fact that we got all of these facts, in fact, we got a mountain of evidence, circumstantial and
That's
factual,
right.
in every sense, to show this
That's
guy
right.
is not natural-born citizen. So the only thing the other side has got against us, the only thing, is Saul Alinsky's fifth rule for radicals: freeze the target, polarize it, ridiculize it, marginalize
mm-hmm.
it, and make
mm-hmm.
it irrelevant. And that's all they
right.
can do, because they cannot
right.
confront us on fact
right.
and truth.
That's right. There's not one, you cannot find one federal lawsuit which says natural born citizen is, and after is defines the set of facts that addresses Obama. You will find the set of facts addressed for Obama in the statutory law section, Title 15, Section 1401, is that it? Where it defines
yeah,
who is a citizen at birth, not a natural citizen at birth, but a citizen at birth by law, which is like instant naturalization law that makes you at birth you are naturalized. You don't have to then do it when you're 21. But he meets the statutory requirements for citizen at birth if all his facts that he claims are true, like being born in Hawaii. But we don't know if that's true.
Well, if it is true,
he's a citizen at birth, but he's not a natural-born citizen at
right.
birth because his father was not even an immigrant to this country.
Well, think for a minute, Commander. This man on official White House stationery with his signature attached to it alleged that he was born in Queens Hospital in Honolulu.
No, he withdrew that. That's been withdrawn. It was proven to be a fabricated letter put together with HTML script code on the internet with an image of the White House logo, an image of his signature, and the text typed in between. The White House never stood behind that letter, and it was taken off that internet site. That was some sort of tactic to try. It's like his birth, it's his certification of birth.
Black bag. He has claimed to have been born in Queens Hospital and has not been corroborated yet.
Well, then he switched it later to Capilani.
Yeah, Capilani, right.
Yeah,
so no corroboration from any official hospital who you would think would be.
Let me tell you who
eager to have the president of the United States born in their hospital.
We have a citizenship chameleon in the White House. He is what he is.
An illegal alien in the White House. Maybe.
When he was running for the Senate, he was bragging that he was born in Kenya when he was over there campaigning as a senator-elect and senator. He bragged about being born in Kenya. It was covered in the papers over there, born in Kenya, senator-elected. Now he doesn't want to that's all misunderstanding. Then he was born in Hawaii in Kapalani in Queens Hospital. Then he was born in Kapalani. We don't have all we have is a digital image on a laptop. Of a computer printout. We don't know if that digital image was created by the paper that the reporters waved is actually a printout of that. We don't know if the picture then they created after that is a picture of the digital image printed out and then folded up and then they waved it and said, oh, here's the original paper that we... That digital image could have been...
It looked pretty crisp, didn't it?
Yeah, but that digital image could be... the people have said it was totally created out of whole cloth.
Yeah, but again, his sister says he was born in one hospital. He says he's born in another. Neither of the two hospitals you would think would be eager to confirm the fact that the president was born at their hospital has officially corroborated it.
When you're lying, it's hard to keep the facts straight, isn't it?
It is indeed. I mean, there's so many contradictions and so many. I've never seen the like in this case. And there's other than the talk radio and the internet, people like Andre Shea King, there's incredulousness. Credulousness on the part of the
people are waking up. Half the people suspect this now that maybe it was only 5% when I filed my suit, but now half the people believe there's something wrong here. When is the Congress? You know what? I heard on the internet that somebody called Congressman Posey's office, the guy who's sponsoring H.R. 1503, and said, did you see this information out about Obama being born a British subject? Oh, yeah, we're well aware. Why don't you bring that up? Well, we think it's too controversial. It caused too much disruption. We're not going to go there. When are they going to wake up and stand up for their oath to the Constitution? If they know he was born a British person, and Obama has admitted that on his own website, that he was born subject to the British National Nationality Act of 1948, he's born a British subject. So, he had foreign influence at birth through his father. John Jay didn't want that when he wrote the letter putting natural-born citizen in, requesting George Washington to do it. It's a no-brainer from the facts. If this wasn't involving the president and we had an ordinary citizenship case,
the judge would say, give me your birth certificate, blah, blah, blah. Your father was a British subject. Boom, you're not a natural born. Case over.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, sir, and this is what really gets me about it. See, Barack Obama is the most sociopathic liar I've ever seen as president of the United States, ever. You cannot take his word for anything. Even if he says his father is Barack Hussein Obama Sr., even though there's some evidence to show that he is, we can't take his word. We really got to have corroborative
evidence. That's his legal identity. I mean, he was... He put that on the internet on that Kolb saying that's his father, and he has a divorce document that has him in as listed as the not the natural son of Sotero, and desperation of the far left. With a natural born, you have to be a citizen in both parents. The court says that all of a sudden he's going to say my father isn't my father, and it's Malcolm X. Then I'm going to say, okay, get like any other court case where paternity is a question, start the DNA test. Test his half-brother in Kenya. Test him. See if they have the same father.
Exactly. Sarge, I appreciate your call, and I hate to cut you off because you always add so much, but we've got other callers who are waiting to get on, so thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Always, always very informative. Let's go ahead to area code 850. 850, who are we speaking with here?
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, it's James. How you doing, Charles?
James?
Charles? Yeah.
Yes.
You know,
yeah, this James?
I've called you many times before.
This is James. Mm-hmm.
From Florida? James from Florida? What's your area code?
850. 850.
All right. I want to write that one down because you call every show.
Yeah, I call every show. I love talking to you guys. You guys
okay,
are great.
Give me a question. We can talk a lot, and you're on the blog, so just give us a question that's going to help everybody.
Sure. Did you get a response from my email I sent you about that lady that you might want to contact for an interview?
Oh, come on. I answered you in the blog. You know that.
Huh?
James,
I answered you in the blog.
James, I'm gonna mute you right now for just a moment. James, please keep your question focused on the topic at hand. Other business, housekeeping business, you can take care of offline. Okay.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead with your question.
Okay. Yes. Well, I just want to say, going to the media, from what I understand with the media, is that I've heard. Other radio programs that have indicated that with the media, it's a giant cover-up, and that large networks such as Fox News, CNN, ABC have been absolutely threatened with talking about this, and actual hosts on those programs, if they were to mention this, would be.
Do you know who threatened them? Do you know who threatened them? I know who threatened them.
They say people from the Obama administration.
No. It was the Bush administration. After the election, they were all called down there. I remember Rush Limbaugh said he had a secret meeting in Washington, and that's where it was done. All the station owners had to sign off on this. Just like they called the bankers in and threatened them, you have to take the TARP money.
Oh, yeah. But, you know,
they did it to the... They said they're going to cause riots in the streets if you talk about this. Now, our Constitution was scrapped because of fear of anarchy in the streets. We have a police system and an army and patriots like me that will defend the Constitution to the death. People can riot all they want if the Constitution is being upheld, and I don't believe it would have been that many. There would have been, some who would have done that. But if he's not eligible, and they would have held an investigation and proved it, and he was not allowed to be seated, like the Congress was supposed to do.
And with Congress, I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Well, what's your question, though? I mean, we can talk about the media all day long. What's your question?
Yeah. Well, I really didn't have a question. Well, my question was what I asked at the beginning, but I'm not going to go there. But I wanted to just say that I love hearing you guys talk, you and Mario. Of all the people who are involved in this eligibility, you guys are probably the most level-headed, sensible people on the subject.
Oh,
thank you.
That's very nice. Oops, sorry, I thought he was done. James, thanks a lot for the call. Do appreciate it. Let's go ahead and move on to the next caller because we do have a lot of lines waiting. This is area code 208. 208, are you on with us? 208, who are we speaking with?
This is SYC. Betsy, oh.
Hi, how
you doing?
Hi.
You know, I just want to say that, thank you for getting this information out, and that, one of the things that I don't know if the guest knows, is that the New York State Constitution, when they were drawing up the Articles of Confederation, also used the natural born citizen inside of there for the requirement of the presidency.
We're aware of that, but that is not addressed federal law. That's the common law of the United States is what the federal common law is, and we have to rely on the intent and of the founders, but also the Supreme Court decision since the writing of the Constitution, the Venus case, Happer versus Meyerstedt, Elg, the Shanks case. All these cases adopted the Vattel definition. Yeah,
right.
So we don't need that New York definition, and it doesn't apply because that's state law. It doesn't have any precedence in federal court.
True. It's just one more thing that says that they knew what a natural-born citizen was.
What exactly does my lawyer could quote you that lawsuit? Quote me what it says.
Oh no, not the lawsuit. It's in the New York State Constitution.
All right. See that I'm not a lawyer here, so I'm using the wrong terminology. Let's see here. The legal. What is the words in that the document you're pointing to? You'd have it. You can read it.
I don't have it right in front of me, but I know that it's there, and it's specifically referring to a natural born citizen as a requirement.
Are you talking about the Constitution itself? The wording in the Constitution?
No, the New York State Constitution.
New York State,
before the federal, before the United States Constitution, they had conventions, and that they had state constitutions, and every state had it, and it was drawn up. Some of them are real short, some of them are rather lengthy. The New York one also puts inside of there as a requirement for the president is a natural born citizen.
Was this Constitution drawn up after the Revolution or before the Revolution?
This was during the Articles of Confederation.
Okay. All right. Well, I wish Mario was here. I wish Mario was here to be able to handle that. I'm not familiar enough. I do remember hearing about a New York Constitution before, though. Yeah, I did hear it, but I can't tell you if it helps us or hurts us.
SYC, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. Let's go ahead and take another call from area code. It would be area code 202. Go ahead, 202. Who are we speaking with? Wait a minute. Hang on.
202, that's Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
This is Paula Gordon.
Was that Obama calling? Was Obama on the line?
No, it's Dr. Paula Gordon.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hi, Mr. Kirshner. It's nice to have you on.
Thank you.
I have a question. I had not heard this about the Bush administration before.
Read that blog up there in Canada.
How long ago did this come out?
I heard about this over a year ago, but it was written about somebody.
Douglas Hackman and. McLeod, I don't remember her first name.
Judy McLeod.
Bush and Cheney enabled Obama to take his seat. I wrote personally to both of them asking for a special prosecutor to be involved and investigate this, and they didn't even answer me. And Cheney didn't even follow statute. What's that? Section 15 of Title. What is it? Title 3. That about how to conduct a joint session, he ignored the calling for objection. So if somebody was sitting there thinking about objecting and wasn't sure they were going to object, he didn't give them a chance to object state by state. You got to call for the objections of the vote being tallied for each and every vote. You could have, they can challenge any elector's vote from any state. He didn't give each state a chance to have their votes challenged by another state. That's required to be done by law. And so there was a rush to push this through and cover it up. And Bush and Cheney were part of that because they were protecting the usurpation of the Constitution by both political parties last year. Political parties participated in this.
I'm aware of that to some extent, but I hadn't heard that the Bush administration had actually
They called in all the station owners and talking heads and had a secret meeting.
So,
now let me tell you where it's written.
It's a blog called
Western Center of Journalism. Canada Free Press, I think it is. Yeah, Canada Free Press.
The Free Press, the report that I'm familiar with that they've done, Douglas Hagman and Judy McLeod, tells about law firm that has benefited so greatly from all of the suits. I think of the $1.7 million or so in funds that have been given to them for their defense of these eligibility concerns.
Well,
and they talk
I
about
knew about
that
this
group.
Even before. I knew about this even before that writing up there. That's confirmed I got wind of this when Rush Limbaugh talked about on his radio show back in the fall of 2008 that he was being called to Washington for a secret meeting and he couldn't talk about it. He'd be gone for a couple days.
And what do you suppose?
And then the rumors came out in the blog as to what the meeting was about and that it was the press was told to keep quiet.
He wouldn't reveal the topic or the reason. Now, Charles, what do you suppose he was told?
I think he was told that the people have voted. And all these people who are questioning the constitutional eligibility are nutcases, and if you go with them and give them a voice, there's going to be rioting in the streets by Obama's ACORN and people like the SEU and whatever, all those different organizations that are going to go out there and stir up trouble, and this is all, you know, my belief, my opinion, and that they were... Like, the bankers were forced to sign off on a document before they left the room. They must accept this TARP money, even though it was unconstitutionally forced on them.
Mm-hmm.
They were forced, in my opinion, and what I've heard in the rumors on the blog back in the late fall of 2008, and all what I heard fit the facts and the lay of the land, and nobody was going to put anybody on the air to talk about this or write about it, was that they had signed a document saying they would not allow anybody to cover this or put these people on the air because of the fear of violence, that if Obama doesn't get seated after the Electoral College has elected him due to the popular vote, that you're going to cause an insurrection in the country, and they're going to use those laws against the stations and revoke their licenses. Because they're causing stirring up domestic
tranquility.
What are the laws against causing? I can't
ensuring
grasp
domestic tranquility. That's that's the phrase that comes to my mind.
Causing insurrection. There's laws on the books that you cannot go. They will consider they prosecute you for a hate crime, that type of stuff. You know, you're stirring up trouble when there don't need to be any stirred up. They're stifling free speech.
This is just stunning. Wow.
Well, again, I can't point to I'd have to go to the Rush Limbaugh shows and find out what date he was down there, but that's the day I believe it happened. And I'm putting this together like a jigsaw puzzle because I've been following this since July of 2008 and been blogging.
It was around his birthday because he said that they surprised him with a birthday cake. And his birthday is January 12th. He was here.
And he never would reveal the topic of his of that meeting.
That's right.
Yet after that, the all the media was shut down. Even Fox News won't talk about to this day yet.
No.
And then we became labeled the birthers. You know, ridiculed with Saul Alinsky, rule number five.
Mm-hmm. Well, even the folks on the right, the so-called right conservative, many of them are absolutely adamantly opposed to any discussion about his eligibility. They say that you're chasing after, going down a rabbit hole with it, and there are more important things that we need to be dealing with.
And we're just a fringe, and you and I are just a fringe. Yet 50% of America believe what we believe. There's a question about his eligibility.
Of course.
And we're a fringe. We're probably two-thirds of the Tea Party movement.
By the way, I want to mention, too, that if you folks are interested in reading the brief, you can find it at Mario Apuzzo's website, and that's Puzo, P-U-Z-O, 1.blogspot.com. You've got that there. And also, I don't mean to be interrupting, Dr. Gordon, are you have you finished with your comments before I move on?
Yes, I have. I just would like to let your listeners know that my website is resource that they can go to and find out about all the different parts of the jigsaw puzzle. I did miss this puzzle part, though, that has to do with the Bush administration and the White House after the election. But that's
well, you do know that Cheney didn't conduct the joint session.
I do know that, but I'm talking about the actual meeting that you're talking about with the media. That little bit of information I've never
heard before. I can't say that I was there and witnessed it, but enough people were talking about it at the time that I believe with all my heart that it went down. Mm-hmm. I do, because just looking at the facts of what happened, how could you shut down all the media? It had to be orders coming out from the president and Homeland Security Department threatening them, and it started right after that meeting that Rush Limbaugh said he had to go to, and he would not reveal what it was for.
Well, there is that parallel theory with the Hageman-McLeod research, but the website
that confirms it. That when I read that up there, that fit everything I knew from the end of 2008.
But that was instigated by the law firm, or the people that were involved with that were people who were supporting Obama. So that's why this is new information to me that the White House itself might have been involved. But anyway, my website is eligibilityquestions.com.
I'll check out your comment and go back and read that up there in Canada. But when I read it, for some reason, I thought it was paralleling virtually identical what I knew about from 2008.
Different source, I think. This may be just an additional parallel universe that we are dealing with here. Well, thank you again.
Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
Dr. Gordon's website, eligibilityquestions.com, excellent resource. She is.
If Mario was here, he probably could have corrected me if I was putting out anything that is too, let's say, from the blogosphere rather than from hard facts. You know, he says, Charlie, when you say things like that, that's your opinion, but we can't go to a court of law and prove that. Maybe when we get into the court of law, we could take depositions of people like Rush Limbaugh, even though they'd be a hostile witness, maybe, you know what I mean, and ask them what happened, and we'd find out everything that I heard in the fall of 2008 was true.
Mm-hmm. You know, my producer reminds us, too, that Rush went to the White House at the same time that George Will had that dinner for all the conservatives, if you recall.
That could have been the cover story for it.
Yeah, and remember, everybody thought he was being invited to Washington to attend that dinner that Obama had. It was hosted by George Will, but Obama was there. Everybody thought Rush was invited, and then Rush came back on the air a day or so later and said, you know, this is really funny because I wasn't even aware of the fact that they were having this dinner. I wasn't invited. I had been in Washington at the request of the president. And
there
as
you
I
go.
Recall, I mean, that he
and why would Rush
Bush.
Limbaugh be quiet about what the president told him?
Didn't he?
What was going on then was so controversial that he was called to Washington. It was the eligibility question. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt that that's why they were called down there. But, you know, it goes into my opinion at this point, but someday the truth is all going to come out.
Yes.
It's going to come out.
And George Bush was in the White House at the time.
George Bush
was in the White House. So it had to have been from President Bush to tell him
And Cheney, and I can imagine Secretary Chertoff with her. I wrote to Chertoff, too, and asked him to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate this. He never answered me. Nobody answered me. I wrote a five-page letter detailing all that I knew about Vattel and the founders and Jay Letter and copies of all that and Natural Born Citizen. Everything that's in the lawsuit, that letter was used as the skeleton to frame my lawsuit because those were the examples of the evidence that I had tried to go to Congress, to the president, to everybody, my senators, other senators, the media. I have all these letters, and nobody answered me. They didn't even say thank you for your letter. They
did
just
you,
didn't
did,
answer me.
Did you send it certified mail so someone had to sign for it?
Some I did, yes, to the Supreme Court. Yes, they went by registered. I wrote to the Supreme Court. The other things went by, like, Federal Express, things I can trace. In addition, every written letter by mail, I faxed them to their office. So I have the fax machine dates and timestamps. And like the senators, I faxed it to their home district office and the D.C. office. So we have an evidence pile that I made all kinds of attempts to bring this to attention to every part of our government, and they ignored me.
Well, I think part of it, though, is that it's just beyond belief that he could have gotten to the point that he got to without having been eligible.
Because both parties were complicit. Both political parties were complicit.
Well, no, there's another explanation, too. And I think when you look at, for instance, where Glenn Beck is coming from, I think he really doesn't understand the difference between native-born and natural-born. And
well, but in the time of the Constitution, native-born and natural-born meant the same thing.
Because you read Vattel, it says that
the natives or indigenous, which was translated to the natives or natural-born, are the people born in the country to citizen parents of the country. He uses the word native and indigenous, and in the English translation, natural-born, interchangeably.
Well, if we go beyond,
but in modern colloquial English, native is just born, you know, where you were born. That's,
exactly,
that's
and I think that's the distinction that they don't understand today.
Exactly.
That Glenn Beck,
the progressives have changed language. We don't know what it is, you know, and they really have rewritten history, haven't they?
Yes, and that's exactly what Glenn Beck is talking about on his program now. How the progressive
and Hitler was the far, Hitler came from the far right. No, he was a National Socialist.
Yeah.
He was a socialist.
Yeah.
He wasn't from the far right. He was a leftist.
That's right. Dr. Gordon, they rewrote
history.
I'm sorry, Dr. Gordon. I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for the call. Do appreciate it. And again, check out her website. She's got some great information on it. It's already rolled off, and I didn't write it down. I'm sorry. And I'm sorry.
Tell her I'm sorry for being so passionate about this. you get me going, and I just keep going.
Okay, we've got area code 512 joining us tonight. 512, who are we speaking with?
Texas voter. Good evening.
Hi, Texas voter. How you doing tonight?
So far, so good. It's always good to hear what's going on in this issue, and I'm happy to talk to Mr. Kircher and proud of his
work and
the forefront of this fight.
Are you in Houston, Texas?
Austin area.
Because somebody from Houston just donated $100 to www.protectourliberty.org. Thank you very much.
I wish I could afford to do that. I've sent what I can for now, but I'm trying to muster up a little bit more. Sent you a gold coin, though.
Oh, thank you very much for that. That Mario.
It improved
you
in
need
value
to, you
in
need
the
to
transit.
Write to, you need to write to Mario about that. He's having trouble liquidating it, and he should return it to you, and then you can redonate.
Really? Because you could go into any coin shop and get more than $300. If that's a problem, send it back, and I'll do that.
There's some issue that you and he need to email each other.
I'll take care of that. I wanted to talk to tonight and suggest maybe that we could publicize a little bit more. Something that I've been successful with is talking about the constitutional requirements for the House and the Senate and the President, even without getting into specifics. If I just discuss and get people to agree that the Constitution requires progressively more strict requirements on each office, and the highest office requires the highest restrictions on it for eligibility, and then it's incontrovertible. There's no way that they can suggest that we shouldn't have the strongest possible restrictions.
Why do you think they required the strongest possible restrictions for the presidency?
Commander-in-Chief, and it's the most powerful office in the country, and perhaps
and
in
it's
the
a
world.
Singular. It's a singular office. It's one
That's
man
right.
has all the power, and
exactly.
the national security of our country is in his hands.
Exactly, and once they realize what I'm talking about and what you're just mentioning, it all falls down to you're beating a dead horse. Mm-hmm. No, it's the Constitution. These people, I just don't understand how they can.
The progressives, starting in 1890, have tried to rewrite what the Constitution really says.
Well, I would recommend if a specific dialogue can be recommended and shared with everybody, the requirements for House, Senate, and President. Once you lay those out for people, then you can see the light go off over their head. Yes, this has to be. This is the national mm-hmm. security requirement for that particular office. And again, thank you for all the
lesser offices, including governors. You just have to be a citizen. You can be a born citizen.
That's exactly
citizen.
Right. Just a citizen.
You can be a naturalized citizen. Mm-hmm. You can be born under the Long King Arc, a citizen born here from two resident Americans, non-Americans. But when it gets to the presidency, and then later by constitutional amendment, the vice presidency too. You must be a natural-born citizen. There's two adjectives in Article 2 that aren't there anywhere else in the
mm-hmm.
Constitution.
Exactly.
And the 14th Amendment did not address Article 2. And you know, when an amendment cancels a previous part of the Constitution, they reference it. You know, they
mm-hmm.
go, it says that this amends this and whatever. The 14th Amendment just said, it basically set up that the slaves who were property and now free and were not citizens because they weren't because citizenship flowed from the father back then. They could never become citizens because they weren't citizens. They were property. Now they're free, and their children couldn't be citizens because they weren't citizens. So the 14th Amendment basically was written to give people born in America citizenship. So the slaves freed now were citizens. They could then procreate natural born citizens. So their children
mm-hmm.
could become president, but the first generation couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's,
so that's how that's how the 14th Amendment got there, but it that had nothing to do with Article 2. It didn't change Article 2. It just allowed to get a starting point for the freed slaves to get citizenship.
This whole issue is shut down so tightly, I can't even get an elected official or even law enforcement to answer the simple question, what do you think was the framers' intent using the
mm-hmm.
phrase natural-born citizen? They just won't answer the question.
Well, if you have the DOJ headed by a guy like Holder, who won't prosecute the Black Panthers for
mm-hmm.
standing at a voter's booth, a station there with batons in their hand at attention,
right.
threatening white voters,
yes.
you're not going to get them to address this question. You know, if Bush and Cheney were covering up for this, you know darn well that the DOJ is right now. You know, I heard another rumor. The DOJ actually has a blog squad that's out
mm-hmm.
there monitoring the blogs and also participating in the blogs, helping to suppress arguments like we're making. That statement was been charged in the blogs for a long time, and that there's one in the White House, and it's coordinated by DOJ people to make sure they don't do anything blatantly illegal, like obfuscating the Constitution. I guess that's not blatantly illegal.
You mean
apparently not these days.
What you're hearing then, Charles, is that there are bloggers out there who are working
paid.
Paid.
They are paid. They are paid by the Obama campaign, but they are supervised by DOJ. Just look up the phrase "blog squad" in quotes, and then put White House and or DOJ after it in Google. Now, Google may be filtering it out, and you might have to look in the second page because they tend to sandbox this stuff. But search on some other search engine. But look under quote "blog squad" and then White House and DOJ, and see what comes up.
Hmm.
Thank
Lots
you
of
again.
Buzz out there about it.
Thank you again, Mr. Kirshner, and thank you to Andrea Shea King for the great program tonight. I'll get in touch with Mr. Apuvzo about that other.
Yeah, he
hard
tried.
Asset
there was some
donation.
There was some difficulty. It could be a legal thing of converting it into cash.
Yeah, it must
or,
be.
I don't know.
There's no problem selling gold right now.
Well,
thank you.
All right. Bye bye.
Good night.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Texas voter. Appreciate it very much. We have our producer who is trying to contact Mario Apuzzo. He's not getting a signal from him right now, which leads me to believe that he's probably still on the train and might even be in a tunnel. Sometimes that happens. So
I joked last night that he was in Washington, D.C. deposing Obama, but But that was just a joke.
The telephone number, if you want to call in, the lines are clear now. So 646-478-4604. Okay, I've got a couple of things here that I wanted to bring to your attention, Mr. Kirshner, and that was that SYC, who had called in a little while ago about the New York Constitution, says that he found it, and he said that this is the wording, that no persons except natural-born citizens or such as were citizens on or before the 4th day of July, 1776, or such as held commissions under the United States during the war and have at any time since the 4th day of July, 1776, become citizens of one, and then that's where it ends. He says that's what he was referring to, and he found it at usconstitution.net, and it's you can find
it. You know why that fits? Because you know who wrote the Constitution of New York? I'm pretty sure it was John Jay, who became the first Supreme Court Chief Justice of the United States. And John Jay put the word natural born into the U.S. Constitution with General Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So that all fits. But could somebody forward that to Mario just in case? But I'm pretty sure he's seen that. But I think he told me one time it doesn't matter. That would be a state constitution. It wouldn't have any precedence over the federal law. But it does reinforce what people were thinking at the time. And if my memory is correct, and John Jay did write the New York Constitution post Revolutionary War, and it all fits because he was the one that wrote to George Washington and said we should prevent any foreign influence on the president because he's commander of the armies that he should be a natural born. That precludes any foreign influence at birth because mm-hmm. both parents are citizens and he's born in the country. He doesn't have any strings attached to any foreign country by birth. So it all makes sense. It's natural law. It's natural law is like gravity. It's intuitively obvious. You don't need a only a person like Obama would force us to go to court to get natural law redefined.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He says, yes, New York ratification of the U.S. Constitution. He does not, SYC does not have Mario Apuzzo's email address.
Okay, go to puzzo1.blogspot.com. It's up and right in the upper right-hand corner. Go to puzzo1.blogspot.com, but for convenience, it's Apuzzo, APUZZO, at Errols, that's ERols.com, Apuzzo@Errols.com.
Okay.
And you can also get it at www.protectourliberty.org, www.protectourliberty.org. While you're there making a donation via PayPal, is just scroll down and you'll see his email address and address down there, and there's a link to his blog there. So while you're dropping $100 in the PayPal account, you can get it there.
There you go. That's right. Now I want.
We need to help to pay for those ads. Those ads cost thousands of dollars, and we need the help.
What kind of a response and reaction are you getting to those ads, Mr. Kirshner?
Oh, tremendous! Enough to keep the advertising going for one thing, but also people are saying how educational they are, and some of Mario's essays are like historic, and he coined the phrase "unity of citizenship." That's what natural-born citizen means: unity of citizenship at birth, unity of citizenship. He wrote an essay on that, and I published it there. It was beautiful. His writings are going to be talked about as very important in the first half of the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about putting him in a newspaper like that, the obots can't scrub it. You know, the obots have gone in and scrubbed AP story. They've scrubbed the Wayback Time Machine. Things that are critical to Obama have disappeared.
Yes.
Well, it's pretty hard to get rid of 100,000 copies of a newspaper.
Yes, that's right. You know, what's interesting, too, is that there are some things about George W. Bush that have been removed as well. And give you an example, my producer Dave and I did a piece about George Bush for BigGovernment.com. They did a special this week on the first year anniversary of the president being out of office, and we were looking for a particular video of President Bush when he landed on the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln. When
mm-hmm.
that, you know, remember the big banner, mission accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we could not that was impossible to find. We absolutely could not find the video of that jet circling and then coming in for that landing. It wasn't
yep.
available. So.
Well, that's the problem with the internet. It's too easy to scrub because you have everything is sourced at one central point, Which is good from one point of view when you want to make changes that are legal. But if you wanted to delete anything, there's only like one or two places to go, and it's gone eventually. By the way, in the chat room, people are talking about the book, The Law of Nations. I always remind people to quote the book as The Law of Nations or Principles of Natural Law. That's its full title. It isn't just The Law of Nations. Or it says The Law of Nations or Principles of Natural Law, because he codified natural law and said this should be the law of nations.
Okay.
You get where he's coming from?
Yeah.
Because the law of nations are universal laws, universal truth that all cultures and countries of the world will accept. And if you are born in a country of citizens of their country, no other country would be idiotic to try to claim you as a citizen of their country. Because under natural law, you're a citizen of the country you were born into, two citizens.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the universal truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's intuitively,
right,
naturally obvious. Battelle codified that concept in when it comes to citizenship. He codified lots of things that are, you know, like inalienable rights and natural to people all over the world. And he called the book The Law of Nations or Principles of Natural Law. So we always, at our side, you know, words mean things. We should always throw that in on the end of that book.
Yes.
It's the full title because it educates people.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about laws made of foreign nations. That's what the Obuts try to say. Oh, the book, Law of Nations, that's an international law book. Not true. The whole first volume is about self-governments of a nation, how to set up an ideal form of government. And our founders used that first volume to create our federal government. A unique form of government that's never been done before, with a written constitution, independent judiciary, the people are sovereign, everybody else is below them, all these things. You know, they didn't adopt everything from his book, but a lot of ideas came from Battelle. And Battelle became the federal common law because we didn't have a common law established at the federal level. The commonly still used English common law, but the federal government is entirely different. We needed a law that was common to everybody. So they chose this law of nations and principles and natural law because it's intuitively obvious.
Mm-hmm.
To like one state wanted to have citizenship on this, another state wanted to have citizenship on this, another country wanted to have citizenship this way. So the federal government had to have a unifying principle. So when it came to the president, they wanted a person with sole allegiance, and the only way you can get that is with natural law as a natural born citizen.
Yeah.
So that's how I got there.
Yeah. I see that Sarge is notating some things in the chat room about that. He said many have said that Battelle's Law of Nations was the primary reference and defining book used by the framers of the U.S. Constitution. It is really not possible to overstate the influence of Battelle's Law of Nations as the primary reference book in drafting the U.S. Constitution. Emmerich de Vattel's Law of Nations is almost beyond comparison in its value as a defining document regarding U.S. Constitution intent and interpretation, the Law of Nations or the Principles of Natural Law. Thanks, Sarge. Appreciate that.
And it's also mentioned in the Constitution. The Law of Nations is mentioned in the enumerated powers in Section 8, where the enumerated powers of Congress are laid out. It says there, they shall have the power to define and punish piracy and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the Law of Nations. We also have the quotes of Benjamin Franklin thanking Dumas, who did a newly edited edition of the Law of Nations or Principles of Natural Law, and sent four copies to Benjamin Franklin in 1775 of the new edition in French.
Mm-hmm.
They got them. They were using French editions then because the founders were bilingual and multilingual. In fact, they could read Greek, they could read French, they could read Spanish. They were reading Battelle in his native written language, French.
In the French, right?
Yeah, he was a German, but he was bilingual, Battelle, and he wrote his papers in French, which was the diplomatic language of the time. He wrote it in French so that all the nation's diplomats could read it, because French was a diplomatic language.
Mm-hmm.
English was not
mm-hmm.
the diplomatic language then in the continent. So anyway, the point is, it heavily influenced the founders. George Washington was quoted as having a copy on his desk hours after his inauguration, reading it, because he had a study up on governing under this new federal government, the form of government which was based on Battelle's Volume 1.
Hmm.
So he was seen reading it.
Yes.
the day he was sworn in.
So that is an established fact. But let's bring it back.
But the progressives have buried Vattel. You know why? Because of exactly why what they're doing, what they want to do. They don't want the natural law of Vattel in the Constitution anymore. They don't want the principle of inalienable rights. They don't want it in there. They don't want the people being sovereign. They want the power of the federal government to be controlled by the elites down there in D.C. They want to have an imperial Congress and a president who's a king.
Let me bring you forward here to something that was reported just this week, and again at WorldNet Daily. Seemingly, WorldNet Daily is the only one that's covering this. There's been a bill co-sponsored by about three dozen lawmakers in Arizona who want to require candidates not only to submit the information, but state officials to independently verify the accuracy of the eligibility of a presidential candidate. And then we also know, besides Arizona, that New Hampshire...
It's about time.
Yeah, okay. New Hampshire, Georgia, Virginia, and New York also are writing proposals. I think Indiana as well. So, I mean...
Just think about it. Just think about it, Andrea. The United States of America. What is the name of our country? United States. The states have to reassert their sovereignty.
That's right.
Take a look at the Pledge of Allegiance. To the republic for which we stand. It doesn't say to the democracy for which we stand. The states have to reassert their authority. If enough of a few states would put laws in effect requiring a presidential candidate to prove he's a natural-born citizen, to conform to the intent of the founders for that constitution that the states created and ratified through their legislators, the votes of the people in their various states, this would never have happened. The states gave up their sovereignty too much. They got to take it back. They used to have the senators appointed by the state's legislator. That was the diminishment of states' power when that amendment was passed, having direct election. The fact that the states put laws in that they require the electors to vote by the majority of the people instead of voting based on constitutional law. I mean, the electors should be following the Constitution as what it was intended.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't have to vote for what the people vote for if the vote of the people is illegal. They elect an illegal candidate, they shouldn't be ratifying it. If people would have voted for Mickey Mouse, as it happened in some city council votes and things like that, are the people supposed to then ratify that, put Mickey Mouse's caricature in that seat in the council? I mean, you can get ridiculous about this, but Obama is ridiculous because he's not a natural-born citizen and he's sitting in the Oval Office illegally now.
So what do you think is going to come of the fact that we've got these, for example, the National Conference of State Legislatures, which monitors and tabulates the work of legislative bodies, confirms through its database that several other plans in several other different states are in the works.
Go for it. Get them in place soon, because I guarantee you the progressives will challenge those in the Supreme Court. So they've got to get these votes and these laws on the books this year. So that if they're challenged, they can be resolved before 2012.
Now, how will Obama stop the states from making this move?
Oh, they'll pull out this. It's like unconstitutional for some reason or another. But they can't. They won't win. The states are still sovereign. They have all powers to do this under the 10th Amendment.
The states created
the federal government. The people through the states, speaking through the states, created the federal government. But you know how you can sue on anything. The progressives, if Obama's in power yet, which I hope he isn't, but say he is, he will have the DOJ bring some kind of lawsuit saying you states, you can't do this. This is they're going to say it's a federal election, therefore you cannot restrict who is running.
In New Hampshire,
that's what I could off the top of my head would be their argument.
Right. In New Hampshire,
but the states can do that. It's their election for a federal office.
They can do that constitutionally. It is, as you say, the sovereignty of the states, each individual state. The pressure, I see it, is going to come down on the governor, the secretaries of state, and the legislature through the goons in the marching army, let's just say, the Obama marching army of the Acorn people, the SEIU.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lot of pressure be placed.
And Saul Alinsky's rule for radicals, ridicule. And the press and the MSNBC naming that governor the most horrible person in the world, or the worst person in the world, or whatever that, what's that guy on, Keith Oberbutt, whatever his name is,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, the guy who went on that rant about Scott Brown, called him every profane adjective in the book.
Mm-hmm. The one whose sanity we often question. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're out of control over there. They just can't understand that the people have spoken very clearly in Massachusetts, and the press can't control the people. We're wising up to them. They can fool some of the people some of the time. You know adage of Lincoln, they fooled us last year, but they're not going to fool us, all of us, for all the time.
Right. We won't be.
We're waking up.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, I want to explain what in New Hampshire they're saying. A pending plan would require certified copies of birth certificates for nominees for president and vice president. Georgia.
Great. You're talking about original type documents now, not these computerized summaries of a birth certificate.
Well, it says certified. It doesn't make that clear. I haven't.
You know, they gotta write these. You know, some of these state legislations are being written by people. I think they're placebos to the people, thinking they're taking tough action, and they're going to write it in such a way that a cold will be acceptable, and that's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm. It has. Yeah,
you cannot trust a computer printout anymore. I mean, they have Photoshop. This is how Obama fooled us. All he did was show a digital image on the internet of a cold of uncertain origin. The Hawaii officials have never confirmed that they issued a kolb to Obama in 2007, which is the bleed-through date stamp on that kolb. They've never confirmed that. I think we're going to find out they never did. I think they're going to find out that was made out of whole cloth.
Mm-hmm.
There may be an original birth record in Hawaiian records, but we don't know what it says.
No.
And it may have been amended and modified when Obama was an adult.
Right. The state of Georgia.
So they got to write that that's a certified copy of an original birth certificate showing witnesses that you got to get specific with these guys, with witnesses of the birth attesting to that, signatures. They you know, there's, with what we've seen with Obama and how they can weasel this stuff and computer generated this and digital image of that. If you got any contact with these people, make sure they make the verbiage very strong to preclude any type of situation like Obama with just a computer-generated form being used. It has
well,
to...
Because the Constitution is a good example of that. It does not specify how you certify the eligibility. I mean, you have to go back to supporting documents to get that information.
Well, when they wrote the Constitution, the question what a natural-born citizen was would have been, and they looked at you like an idiot. It's only in a progressive rewriting of words that we now question what words mean. We'd have to ask, what does "is" mean?
Yeah.
Remember Clinton? I did not have sex with that woman, Monica Lewinsky. And then somebody said in a deposition, "Well, did you?" And he said, "Well, it all depends what "is" means."
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a president says on a digital image, "I am a natural born citizen."
Right.
But he won't. But did you ever hear him say it with his own lips?
No.
Did you ever hear Obama say he signed that document in Arizona swearing he was? But did you ever hear him say it with his own lips? No.
Yeah.
In his website, he says, "I'm a native-born citizen," which in Battelle's time was synonymous, but in modern time, a native-born citizen is not. So he would play weasel games and say, "I never said I was a natural-born. The people accepted that I was, and I never said it, so you can't get me for perjury."
Mm-hmm.
But we got the Arizona sworn statement to get him on perjury when the day comes.
Mm. Well, heck. I mean, you can get him on perjury just because he had to have filled out some kind of forms when he became the state senator and the U.S. senator. I mean,
that didn't require a natural born for U.S. senator.
No,
so,
but he has used more than one name.
And yeah, you're right.
If he claims that Barack Hussein Obama is the only name he's ever used, that's not true.
Mm-hmm. On his bar application, he did that too. But the most damning one will be that Arizona sworn statement where he says he's a natural born citizen. If we ever can prove that he knew all along that he wasn't and signed that document, then he's going to do a perp walk. Now you got Nancy Pelosi too, that signed two different kinds of certification certificates. The states that would take it without the certification of being natural born. She gave him one that just said he was nominated, and the Hawaii they required one that says he was a natural born, met the eligibility state requirements of the Constitution. Now, I wonder why, because Obama was born there, and they maybe knew something and didn't want to get caught involved in perjury themselves. So they made the DNC swear it. Nancy signed that for Hawaii. I think it's the only place that she certified that he was eligible under the Constitution. All the other states, she didn't do that, because I think she wanted to avoid perjury herself.
Mm-hmm.
So we got Nancy in Hawaii, and we have Obama in writing in Arizona. So there's two cases there where we find this was a conspiracy to subvert the intent of the Constitution by the Democratic Party. Those two guys are going to do perp walks.
Boy, I want to be alive to see the day. I really do.
I think you and I will. This is going to come out. If we don't succeed in getting him removed this year or before his term is up, I don't think he's going to be able to rerun because of the states are going to change the laws.
Mm-hmm.
But even afterwards, some point in time, the truth will come out. It's like sitting on a beach ball in a swimming pool. They are not going to keep this from surfacing some point in history. It's
mm-hmm.
going to come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are too many people who are asking questions and doing the due diligence to find out the,
mm-hmm.
you know, all of this. Now, Sarge just popped in, and he says to ask you to detail the five methods by which a Hawaiian birth certificate can be obtained.
I'm not a lawyer. He got to tell him to go
okay.
ask Donna Frio. My lawyer's not here, but Donna Frio walked away from that. He had it all spelled out in his blog, and he just walked away from it and going after this Chrysler suit thing, and God knows what he's doing, but he talks a lot about doing things and he doesn't do them. But he was the expert on that, and he didn't follow through on it.
Mm-hmm. He said that he has the requisite statute numbers and the legal requirements for them under Hawaii.
Well, my lawyer does too, but we're not going that route. We're going on the birth in Hawaii, but yes, but we're leaning more on the natural born citizen argument, and we're not going to go spin our wheels fighting against Hawaiian officials who don't want to live up to their own laws until we have the power of the federal court behind us with a subpoena. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because Mario's a practicing attorney. He can't go on all these tangential things like everybody in the blog says, why don't you do this and why don't you do that? And then I quote Donald Friedman again, he was going to do it, and then all of a sudden he's not going to do it, and he just walks away and closes his blog down. We can't react to just people who talk. We're doing something. We did it very conservatively and professionally, and we're working at it within the system slowly. We have the only case filed in the history of the country against a president after he was sworn in, after he was confirmed by the joint session and before he was sworn in. There's no other case that has that legal judicial ripeness. And also, so we're suing the president-elect, not a candidate and not a sitting president. We sue the president-elect, and we're suing Congress. So they can't point at each other, and the president can't say that was Congress's job, and Congress can't say that, well, that was the executive branch's job. We got them both, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have the judge is going to say, well, okay, if it's Congress' responsibility, DOJ, Congress attorney over here, you answer why it isn't Congress's job.
Mm-hmm.
So as Mario wrote in his brief, if it isn't the elections commission or whatever's job, and it isn't Congress's job, whose job is it?
Secretary of State, electors. I mean, they'll show up.
He has it in the brief. If it's nobody's job, whose job is it?
Yes.
So how can you enforce the Constitution then if the courts will not do judicial review?
And my understanding is that the Supreme Court will not take this on because there is no legislation in effect for them to rule against or with.
Well, our case is a historic case that's going to set up common law on this issue of Article 2, the meaning of it for the rest of this country. Obama is never going to be able to get away with what he did, or the court's going to wimp out and redefine natural born citizen other than a natural law definition of it, and that would be terrible because it wouldn't hold up in international law then. Because natural born citizen and the law of nations and principles of natural law is the core of international law in addition to the core of the federal constitution of the United States as to who can be the president.
Mm-hmm.
So if our courts define natural-born citizen different than all the other countries of the world do, which all use Vattel's definition for a natural-born citizen, we'd be screwing up international relations in the Hague Convention and the whole bit. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
they can't walk away from natural law.
Yeah.
They can't walk away from natural law.
Yeah. I brought Sarge back on with us because he has something else he wants to add to the conversation. Sarge, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Andrea. Mm-hmm. And you, boy, you're a guest here. Man, all you got to do is just point him in the right direction. He gets, man, you're great. You really are, sir.
Well,
hey, remember that Admiral Farragut? Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. This commander is that kind. I'm that kind of naval officer.
Yes, sir.
If you were on my ship,
Paul
I would lead,
Jones.
I would lead you in the harm.
Not yet to fight.
I would lead you in the harm's way, and we would be victorious.
Indeed. I'd like to be there. Let me know when you're going to do it next time.
that's like Admiral Flucky. There are no problems. They're just solutions, challenges, and solutions. Mm.
That's it. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
But I fully agree with
you. I have seen the enemy, and he is mine.
Indeed. I fully agree with your assessment that the state of Hawaii appears to be irredeemably corrupt. They are determined to cover for this guy. You're absolutely correct in that assessment. I think the people should know the spurious and, shall we say, shady methods of which a Hawaiian birth certificate can be issued. I think your argument about the fact that his father was not a citizen is the most important part. But
his father wasn't even an immigrant to this country.
Right, exactly.
We're a nation of immigrants, and Obama's father was not one.
Absolutely, and that your argument is the most important part. But there will be a documentation that's going to be required to prove certain things. I'm certain the birth certificate will surface as corroboration for one legal
item. It has
item
to surface, otherwise he's an illegal alien. If he wasn't born in Hawaii, he's an illegal alien.
Yeah, I really think he's an illegal. I suspect even strongly he may be an illegal alien.
So he needs
alien.
To prove that. When we get into court, he's going to have to prove that he's even a citizen, let alone a natural-born citizen.
Right, and people should know how shady Hawaii is on issuing birth certificates. They have five different legal methods by which you can obtain a Hawaiian birth certificate.
Hawaii was a legal Mexican border. You didn't. You walked across to get to USA through Mexico, and if you wanted to get in on the legal route through the system, you went to Hawaii because their door was so wide open in 1959 when they became a state. Anybody could become
exactly.
a citizen through Hawaii.
You could
even
do it
the chairman
the phone.
Of Hawaii.
You
even the founder of the Chinese nation. Yeah, by
mail
and form.
Right,
yep.
And by phone. You can do it by phone. But they did have a way the registrar would put on the – stamp something on the registrar. He'd put on there accepted by registrar if it was, let's say, the traditional method, you know, a doctor delivering or a midwife in a hospital with all the normal things most people think by which you get a birth certificate. Okay? But there was another stamp they would put on that certification of live birth. Filed by registrar, and that would be put on there in the event where the circumstances were not most people accept. But notice the one that he submitted, it says filed by registrar.
Yep, it doesn't say accepted. It doesn't say accepted. You're right.
Exactly.
Now, you know, I think what happened is when the child was, I believe he probably was born in Kenya, and the grandmother over there is right. And when the grandmother in Hawaii, the maternal grandmother, heard about the birth of the son over there, and she was going to bring him home instead of leaving him over there. I think she was sent over there like your Aunt Matilda out in another state years ago when you were pregnant, 17-year-old. You were sent away and gave up the baby. She was supposed to leave the baby there with the father's family, and she didn't. And the grandmother said, oh, my God, I got to get him citizenship. And she worked at a bank. She wasn't poor. She was wealthy, and she had lawyers at the bank advise her of the liberal laws in Hawaii. Said, well, you just fill this form out and mail it in and say he was born at home with no witnesses.
That's
he's a citizen.
Exactly right. That's probably
and that's what she did. And she
didn't.
She didn't do it because she knew he was going to be a president someday. She did it because he wanted to give her new grandson a citizenship because her daughter was going to bring him back instead of leaving him in Kenya.
Of course. And I suspect that birth certificate that he's hiding might reflect that fact and cast further suspicion on
him. Gonna say, it's going to say a mail-in form, born in home, no witnesses. That's
right.
What they're hiding. Now, if you have statements of the grandmother in Kenya saying he was born there, and you have no witnesses that he's born in Hawaii,
But wait a minute. In 1982, they amended their vital records law to create a fifth kind of birth certificate. Now, under Act 182...
Delayed.
Right, delayed, right. Upon application of adult or the legal parents of a minor child, the Director of Health shall issue a birth certificate for any such adult or minor, provided that the proof of it is submitted to the Director of Health that the legal parents of such individual, while living without the territory or state of Hawaii, had declared, this kills me. I can't believe this.
Yeah.
Had declared
so
that
they codified in law what they were doing already.
Right. The territory or state of Hawaii has their legal residence for at least 1 year immediately preceding the birth or adoption of such child. And now, in this way, the state policies and procedures accommodate even children born out of state, and that's the actual language in the act, with an original birth certificate on record. He could have gone before someone in the lieutenant governor's office, attested to certain facts, and they would have issued him a birth certificate.
Absolutely. It was wide open in Hawaii. Wide open.
Wide open.
And you know,
people
and you know why?
That. People need to know
and,
that.
And you know part of the reason why? Because the progressive of the new state was controlled by progressives, and you know the whole country being controlled by progressives for a long while. And the more citizens you had registered, the more federal dollars you got for this new state.
Right. Right.
So they wanted registered citizens. They didn't care how they got them.
Right. And like I said, if people understand this, they'll understand how shady this whole thing with this guy is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're right. The state of Hawaii is going to drag its feet, obfuscate, do everything they can to cover up this man. They are not honest in this whatsoever. In fact, many of them may even be open to criminal prosecution if the truth ever comes out.
For yeah, well, you know, there was
the
you know about the communist
Hawaii.
You know about the communist hot nest bed in Chicago, right, with Saul Alinsky and all those people?
Yeah,
and you
I'm
got
a refugee
Valerie
from
Jer-
Chicago.
Valerie
I
Jarrett,
know that guy. That guy used
Valerie
to be my state senator.
Well, guess what State of the Union they had the other hotbed of communist sympathizers?
You don't have to tell me.
Hawaii.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Franklin Marshall Davis was there. That's who. That was Obama's mentor, and she had connection, and he had connections to Valerie Jarrett's father. So that's the connection between Chicago and the Jarrett family and Franklin Marshall Davis in Honolulu.
Absolutely. I'm a refugee from Chicago. This guy used to be my state senator. I've known how corrupt he is for 9 years now.
What about the statement by Percy Sutton that he made about Khalilah Mansour being approached? Let me play this clip. It's
the smartest, the most wonderful, smartest man I have ever met. Go ahead.
All right, I'm going to play this clip. It's about 3 minutes long, but it tells a story, and then we'll comment on it.
I hope I can keep quiet for 3 minutes.
Let's talk about the presidential race. What do you make of the situation with Senator Obama? One, did you ever think you would see this in your lifetime, given your background, and two, what you've had to work so hard to overcome in terms of society? And what do you make of this situation with Reverend Wright, his pastor or former pastor?
One, as to Mr. Obama, I think he's the brightest, most wonderful person who has come across the starting line. And I was introduced to him by a friend who's raising money for him. The friend's name is Dr. Khalid Al-Mansour from Texas. He is the principal advisor to one of the world's richest men. He told me about Obama. He wrote to me about him, and his introduction was, there's a young man that has applied to Harvard. I know that you have a few friends left there because you used to go up there to speak. Would you please write a letter in support of him? That's before Obama decided to run. And he interjected the advice that Obama had passed the requirements, had taken and passed the requirements necessary to get into Harvard and become president of the law review. That's before he ever ran for anything. And I wrote a letter in support of him to my friends at Harvard. saying to them, I thought there was a genius that was going to be available. And I certainly hoped they would treat him kindly.
And this is before the world knew of Barack Obama.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Now, what he doesn't say in this clip is that the person that Khalid al-Mansour was going to for money was Prince al-Walid al-Talib, I think it is. He is the nephew of King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia.
And Obama bowed to that king.
That name is al-Walid bin Talal.
Bin Talal, that's it. That's it. Thank you.
And what? Mr. Percy Sutton doesn't tell you is that he was Malcolm X's lawyer.
That's right.
Oh, not only that, sir, he also mentored Black Panther's founders Huey Newton and Bobby Seale in the early 1960s.
So isn't that a great reference to get into Harvard to have Malcolm X's lawyer recommending you, Percy Sutton?
Yeah, and Huey Newton and Bobby Seale, too. Huey Newton being the founder of the Black Panther Party.
Just somebody in the neighborhood, right?
Somebody you know very well. Yeah.
Another Marxist in the neighborhood, you know. He's a Marxist usurper. We got a Marxist usurper in the White House. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, an illegal alien Marxist usurper in the White House.
With deep
That's historic.
Ties to Saudi Arabia.
Oh, sure. That's where the money came in with debit card. I believe all this untraceable money that was donated in $100 and $50 amounts with names like Mickey Mouse or taken right out of home book. I believe they had Acorn people there with debit cards brought in with Saudi money via Venezuela and diplomatic passports, and they sat there at their computers and typed in out of the telephone book names and $50 until that debit card was used up, prepaid debit card. Then they just got the next one.
Yep.
So if you've got 100,000 Acorn workers that'll do anything for $8 an hour, just about anything, and you got unlimited sources of money from the Saudis, and you can get it in via the Venezuela, you know, diplomatic pouches or even directly with the Saudi diplomatic pouches, you know, all that money that accounted for, and it was all like untraceably turned off all the tracing for clearing those debit cards. You didn't have to put any. They didn't track the name on credit cards against the addresses of the card. It just, if the money was good, it was good.
Yep. Let's bring in another caller here. This is a caller with all ones across the board, so I'm guessing that it's probably our gal Marie in New York.
Yes. Hi, Andrea.
Hi there. And before you go, Third Wave Dave, our producer, says that Mario Puzo is on his way in to the chat, to the switchboard. So we're gonna take his call as soon as he gets in. Okay, Marie, go.
Okay. I have a frog. I've been sick for 2 days, so I don't sound like me. Excuse me, gentlemen, but we have a genius in the White House. Didn't you get that?
The first certified chameleon, citizenship chameleon.
Is he hiding under the White House desk?
He's a genius in the White House. The only other thing I want to ask, I guess, and if Mario is going to be coming in, is where exactly they are. They're in a court now in D.C., right? Where they are?
We're in the appeals court in Philadelphia, where the founders wrote our Constitution. It's right across from Independence Hall, the Federal Circuit Court, Third Circuit. Mario has written his opening brief in the appeals process. So it's 30 days. The opposition gets a chance to give the opposition brief, saying they'll say Mario's full of it, you know. And then he gets 2 weeks to reply to that, and then all the paper is in. And then the judges, three panels, the appeals court panel of judges out of the 15, they have three assigned to look at the papers and schedule oral arguments, and Mario gets 15 minutes to argue orally in front of them, and the opposition gets 15 minutes to argue, and then they sit on it and decide it. Or they could just not do oral arguments if they didn't want to. They could just bypass that, but we're going to try to insist on it,
and
even if they
Mario.
Only give us 15 minutes.
Here's Mario with 15 minutes left. Mario, welcome.
Oh, yes. Good evening, everyone. I apologize immensely, but I was away, and I was, you know, I wasn't able to call in. It was just, you know, my schedules, you know, they got conflicted, but here I am. Good evening.
Good evening.
How you doing, Mario?
Hi, Charlie. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I've been you know me, I never know what to say. I'm just a shortage of words.
Well, Mario, maybe what you can tell us now that you're here is, where does the case go from here?
Okay, well, the case right now, it's in the Third Circuit. I'm sure you all know that. It's in Philadelphia, and I just filed the brief the other day, the opening brief, and now the defendants have an opportunity to file their opposition brief. They have like 30 days to do that, and then I file a reply brief, and then the court, you know, they work on it, and they set up hopefully oral argument. We're going to ask for that, and then if they give us oral argument, we go to Philadelphia, which that's going to be a great day, you could imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And the parties argue the case, you know, in front of the court. If for some reason there's no oral argument, it would be decided on the papers, then the court would render a decision.
Do you expect that they're going to give you the same excuse that the other courts have given, and that is that you don't have standing to bring this forward?
Well, that's the issue. I mean, that's one of the biggest issues.
We're at the appeals court right now.
Yeah, it's standing and political question. Those are the two issues that are involved. And standing, there's two types. There's Article III standing and prudential standing. And on political question, that's just analyzing the issue. The lower court basically said it's the job of Congress to do the case, that the court, no, they have no say in it. It's a political question. That's what it's called in the law.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's a political question, the court has no jurisdiction. It's called a non-justiciable matter. In other words, it's not something for the court to handle. Justiciability basically means that it's something that the court handles. So that's the political question part of it. And then the other part is the standing. And it has the two parts to it, like I said, Article III and prudential. I mean, it gets, you know, there's all these steps that you got to go through in order to prove that you have standing, because the burden of proof is on the plaintiff to show that you have standing, which means to show that the court has jurisdiction.
Interestingly, we sued Congress too, but the judge never mentioned that fact.
No, well, there are a lot of things that are not mentioned in the case, and I'll just give you one, you know, a big red flag. If you read the decision by the court, you won't find any mention in there that that Obama admitted that he was born a British subject, a British citizen, and that his father was not an American citizen. You won't find that in the case, and that's one of the arguments that we're contending. Now that's
we're
reason.
Talking about the lower court that we're appealing.
The district court, the federal district court. It's not mentioned as a factual allegation that we're making, you know.
Yeah,
and,
we made it, and they ignored it.
Yeah, and I mean that's the issue on natural born citizen. That is
right.
The issue.
Yeah,
and it's not even mentioned in the opinion. That you know, basically it's a very vague opinion. It hides the arguments. It just says that we don't feel. We don't believe that he's a real natural-born citizen, you know. But it doesn't tell you, you know, why we contend that.
The judge said that.
Yeah,
the judge said that. He was very wishy-washy in how he just kind of like blew off our case on with abstract, unfactual arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In other words, he didn't get into our facts.
Right.
I would imagine that there's a lot of pressure that's going to be put on this judge from the Department of Justice.
Well, now it's out of his hand. It's the three panel judge that are going to see the appeal.
Okay. Well, the three of them. Do you think that they're not going to get some kind of telephone call or, I mean, how?
I mean, off the record, backroom, rubber hose type stuff.
Yeah. I mean, how confident are you that you're going to get a fair hearing on this?
Well, first of all, you know, I have to – first of all, that's totally illegal for another branch of government to be making phone calls or to do anything like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a serious violation.
Mm-hmm.
Very serious.
But who holds them to it if it's the DOJ?
Well,
I might suggest it won't be the DOJ. They'll probably call some political connection or do it through a backyard to a person who's in the same local club as a judge and do it in a cloakroom somewhere with a whisper in the ear. That's the way it'll be done if it's done. I pray to God it isn't done.
Well, first of all,
Mario, did you ever see a case transferred from Newark to Trenton in the same day like it happened to us?
No. Well, first of all, I want to make it clear for the record that under no circumstance can I condone the thought that somebody's going to call up the judges and do something illegal like
right.
that.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
As an officer of the court, I can't be making statements like that even would happen, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Understood.
Now, could it happen? Well, sure, anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at history. I mean, all kinds of things have happened in history, but I surely don't have any evidence of that would happen.
Right.
Now, am I saying that the judges are not going to make a political decision? No, I'm not saying that, but they could make a political decision. The issue is a political question, right? It's a political decision. But they can do that without receiving phone calls by anybody. They just, as an institution, institutionally, they can do that. To think that the Justice Department or somebody like that is gonna—I would never say that. I would never allege that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there was some kind of evidence of that.
And I, as a plaintiff, I pray to God that we still have a legal system left, and that would never happen.
I do too. And I'm
this is the rule of law. This country's got to count on the rule of law. If we've lost that completely, we don't have a republic and a constitution left. We don't have. You know what? If we exhaust the legal system, now Mario is an officer of the court. I'm a retired naval commander. We the people created this government. If the legal system will not hold up, what is left? It's got to go back to we the people and the states.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As we see this happening here, as we talked about earlier with Arizona, requiring candidates, co-sponsoring a bill or writing a bill that would require the candidates to submit the information. But
we're going to exhaust all legal remedies. We're going to do this the right way. And Mario is very, very sharp. He's 25 years practicing in the federal courts. He knows
mm-hmm.
citizenship cases and he knows constitutional law. I mean, Mario's the man. He'll be remembered in history. They'll be writing about him like Payne.
Like they are doing about Vattel.
John Jay.
I appreciate that, Charlie.
Hey,
Mario,
you saw on that editor of the Post and Email, he called your brief a masterpiece in constitutional law.
Yeah, that was quite a compliment. I have to admit, that really is. And, it's humbling. When you get a compliment like that, you just it makes you want to even work harder to meet the standard that somebody has set for you.
Humbling. When you see brilliantly written material by a professional like yourself out there in that morass of BS that's normally circulating around, it just stands right out. You know what I mean? It stands right out, and you nailed it. I mean, I read this brief twice now, and you hit a home run, Mario.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate that, Charlie. And there's a lot in that brief. There really is. It's interesting because it raises issues and questions that go to the heart of our constitutional republic. So it's a fascinating subject. What we're dealing with here. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
You
cited all the common law decisions by our prior Supreme Court decisions. I don't know how they conduct this. I mean, it's just so obvious as the plan in your face, the hand in front of your face. I mean, the natural born citizen is defined by natural law, law of nations, principles of natural law, codified it. The Supreme Court decisions, you named about four or five of them there that continued to cite it, that definition, and it's never been reversed.
Mm-hmm.
There's not one case that the OBOTS can point to and says a natural born citizen is someone solely born in the United States. There's no such case anywhere.
Yeah.
And we have four or five cases.
Although point one, no, they've got one. They've got one, Charlie. What? Indiana.
Oh, yes, the state decision that recently came down in the lawsuit.
You know,
But, gentlemen, a little while ago you were talking about ex parte communications between, agencies of government and, judges and all that.
Yes.
Just a little while ago, the Commander Kirkner was detailing the intimidation of talk show hosts during the Bush administration. So I realize there's a bit of a difference.
Yeah, but that's not the court.
Yeah, but the precedent for intimidation has already been established. And when you're dealing with ruthless people who have a Marxist bent, I don't put anything past them.
And Sarge, you're from Chicago, right?
Yes, sir. Did
Obama ever intimidate a judge out there? Nah, never happened.
Yeah, but here's the thing, okay? You heard the old expression, it takes two to tango, right? Takes two to tango. So the reason why I say what I say is because it's not whether or not these ruthless characters, whatever you want to call them, whether they would want to do that or not. That's only one, but you need two. Now, to think that they're going to get on a telephone or do something and contact a federal court, I mean, who are they going to call? They're going to call a clerk? That means that the clerk is going to, be part of this, and then he's going to talk to a judge, and that a judge is going to be part of this. I can't imagine that. I mean, that would be
so shocking. I can't imagine a federal judge who knows this will come out in history ever even entertaining listening to something like that.
Exactly, it would be a violation. I mean, the judge would have to report it, and that's what I'm saying is that. They accuse us. They accuse the birthers of conspiracy. That's a conspiracy.
Mario, this thing is so weird that we got a judge who actually made references to Twitter as being a valid basis for judicial observation, rather than having it people who submitted briefs before the court, subject to cross examination, and all the documents there and everything else. I mean, I've never seen anything as bizarre as this in my life.
I agree with you with that. What you just said there, that was an unbelievable decision. But you have to remember this. What did I say before? That the court, as an institution itself, can make a political decision. Okay. Mm-hmm. But that's saying something completely different from saying that they're going to be in cahoots with another branch of government. So it's two different things. So the fact that we had that the Twitter decision, that's what they call it, right? The Twitter decision.
Really?
That was the Hollister case. The Hollister.
Yeah. I mean, it's called it because everybody understands when you say the Twitter decision that.
It's a substitute for the courts, for God's
sake. Right.
Yeah. Well, so we all know what that means, right?
General.
So exactly, but again, that's a perfectly legit now from a legal standpoint. I mean, you could argue the law of it. Should the judge say that the case was vetted on Twitter? I mean, that's something else. But
there's nothing stopping a judge from being dumb, but that doesn't
exactly
make him
right. And
the
I'm
law.
Not saying right, and I'm not saying he was dumb. I would never say that.
No, you're an officer of the court. You can't say that. But I'll say he was dumb.
Yeah, but there's nothing to stop the court from making a political decision itself, but not in corruption or in cahoots with a third ex parte contact.
Hey, Mario, I hear the music. Put out your website blog since you got on late.
That's right.
Put out your website blog.
Puzo, P-U-Z-O, the number one, .blogspot.com.
All right. And protectourliberty.org is the other one.
Right.
We are asking for your financial support to help these gentlemen in their mission to uphold the Constitution. Mario,
I'm sending some dough tonight.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's just been a real pleasure. Mario, I'm glad you made it. Thank you.
Thank you, Andre. I couldn't do that to you, not be on your show. Thank you.
Bless your heart. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Good night. Good night, Charlie. We'll be in touch. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye, all.
And Commander Kirshner, thank you again for joining us. It's been a pleasure talking with you again.
It's always a hard for me to fill up the time with words. I just can't seem to find them. Good night, and God bless America. Bye-bye.
God bless you, sir, and God bless you, Andrea. Great show.
Thank you for participating. I appreciate it. And thank everybody who joined us tonight. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again on Monday night, same time, same place. Have a great weekend. Say a prayer for our troops. Pray for their loved ones who await their safe return. God bless you all, and God bless America. Good night, everybody.